and handle the truth.
Teaches every little boy and girl to earn as much as they can possibly, then turn around and spend it foolishly. We created us a credit card mess. We spend the money that we don't possess. Our religion is to go and blow it all. So it's shopping every Sunday at the mall. All we ever want is more. A lot more than we have before.
And good afternoon, America, and welcome to the Monday, September the 8th broadcast of Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, or on the web at republicbroadcasting.org. My name is William Roberts, and I've got good news, hard facts, and workable solutions for you today. Regular listeners to Become Vocal Local know, and wasn't it Tip O'Neill that once said, all politics are local. We also know that in life, trouble has a nasty habit of catching up to us right where we are. And so no matter where you go, there you are. So as children, we learn that unless you want to get stung, it's best not to poke a stick into a hornet's nest and or provoke the schoolyard bully or antagonize a junkyard dog. So in the best of times and in the worst of times, there's always been those that seek to exert their will to power over others. And as the dollar economy continues to lose its purchasing power and status as the reserve currency of the global economy, governments, businesses, and even your neighbors will increasingly turn to legal plunder to keep their own boats afloat when legal tender fiscal policies begin to fail. So we've also heard of the frivolous lawsuits and know that even lawyers face unemployment in times that try men's souls. So no man's property can be secure in this litigious environment where legal positivism rules the land and attorneys roam about as ravening wolves seeking to eat out our substance. You know that I'm all about solutions. And today, I have the honor to be joined by Alfred Adesk. Al has dedicated many years of his life to the study of law, has written extensively, published his own magazine and blog site, and is familiar to many as both guest and host on many radio broadcasts heard over the independent media networks. Recently, Mr. Addis came to understand that in due process of law, the concept of notice is poorly understood and often overlooked, and that a right understanding of the use of notice may offer valuable solutions for freedom lovers who value laissez-faire and laissez-passer principles. Now, I've looked into this topic myself, and I believe that Al may really be onto something worthwhile. So now let's welcome Alfred Adesk and explore this topic further. Alfred Adesk, are you with me?
I sure am, William. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing quite wonderful. This is a very, very interesting concept that you brought to the table when you started to explore due process and the idea of notice. I think that the audience is going to be able to gain quite a bit from this as we go into it. But before we do, and this is such a short segment, give us a little idea about who you are, what you'd like to share with us, and perhaps, if we have time, even how they can get after your blog site.
Well, I started out with a divorce in 1983 that converted me from a roofer into a legal reform activist. I suffered what I thought was a great injustice. Turns out everybody gets railroaded like I did, or pretty much. Wasn't all that unusual, but I thought it was. But it set me on this trail, and here I've been 25 years now, trying to make sense of the system. For a blog, it's at http://adask, A-D-A-S-K, .wordpress.com. And we've got two articles up there right now that deal with the subject of today's program, which will be notice. I'm not sure how much time we have left here.
Well, we're coming right into the break, and when we get back from this break, folks, we're going to go into this topic. Stay with us right here on Become Vocal Local.
Most of mankind's diseases have now been conquered. This medical breakthrough can save your life or the life of a loved one. Please listen. The answer to AIDS, hepatitis A, B, and C, malaria, herpes, TB, most cancers, and many more of mankind's worst diseases has been found. Details of this amazing secret has been freely disclosed in Jim Humble's book, The Miracle Mineral Supplement of the 21st Century, available at miraclemineral.org. Read how in five countries of Africa, over 75,000 cases of malaria and other diseases were successfully treated with this new mineral supplement. Learn more at miraclemineral.org. It also works with cold, flu, pneumonia, sore throats, warts, mouth sores, and even abscessed teeth. Download part one of this amazing book free at miraclemineral.org. Then, if you're satisfied, purchase part two for only $9.95 or the hard copy for only $19.95. Please enter RBN when prompted on where you heard about miraclemineral.org.
Fat burners. I like the sound of that. Fat burners. Life Change Fat Burners. When fat burners are used in conjunction with Life Change Tea, you're going to see a change in your life. Maybe you'll be a movie star. Maybe you'll drive NASCAR. Maybe you'll be a lion tamer. Well, maybe not a lion tamer. Get energy, lose weight, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Your fat burners and tea are available at getthetea.com. Get energy, lose weight, getthetea.com. Your fat burners and tea are available at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Or call us 928-308-0408. Again, 928-308-0408. And don't forget to ask about our Mid-State Fair special. That's getthetea.com.
Hi, I'm Ayala Jags. I'm in business just like you. I spend a lot of time on my cell phone, and I'm very concerned about the potential dangers of cell phone radiation, and you should be too. I found dozens of studies from around the world linking cell phone use to everything from skin conditions to brain tumors. It's shocking, it's scary. Numerous products claim to block cell phone radiation, but do they really? Then I found the Wave Shield. It's the only shielding device that has survived rigorous testing in an FTC-listed lab and is proven to block up to 97% of cell phone radiation from entering your sensitive inner ear. The Wave Shield is easy to apply, it fits almost every phone, and it really, really works. Don't take chances. Protect yourself, protect your family. The Wave Shield is only $19.95. Take just a moment. Call and order your Wave Shield right now. The evidence is growing. Why take a chance? Protect everyone you love. Call now.
866-989-9147.
We have a few sound challenges today, but we'll get through them, and if not, we'll just reconnect and I'll come back on the telephone, Alfred. But let's go into this a little bit, because you've really looked into the concept not only of due process, and maybe we ought to start there so that the audience understands that in the Fifth and the 14th Amendments to the Constitution, we lay out the basic kernel of due process and then just kind of proceed from there.
Well, I won't say that we lay out the the basic kernels. For example, in the Fifth Amendment, it says, in part, nor shall he be compelled, talking about criminal prosecutions, nor shall he be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness of himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, it doesn't define what due process is, per se. You get into the 14th Amendment, and I'm looking for it, trying to spot the 14th Amendment also. It is down here, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. They, you're guaranteed due process under two amendments. But that definition, that there's no definition, at least within the Constitution, of what that is. The courts have come to define procedural due process as the minimum amount of due process to which everyone is entitled every time you go to court. Right? You get at least procedural due process. And procedural due process consists of, number one, notice, and number two, opportunity to be heard. Now, your opportunity to be heard will be a hearing. Right? That's when you're there in front of the judge. But before you get there, you got to get the notice. And I've been aware of procedural due process. I mean, I've understood the two elements. I've been able to chant the little mantra for 10, 15 years. You get two elements to procedural due process, notice and opportunity to be heard. But back in July, it crossed my mind, what exactly constitutes sufficient notice? For example, suppose you and I went to a meeting last week and I loaned you $50. And we go to another meeting this week and I look at you across the room and I just rub my fingers together in the gesture you use when you're signaling a waiter in a restaurant to bring the check. You know how you rub your couple fingers together? And the waiter says, yeah, I'll be there just a second. Okay? You can see, you are giving him notice by means of just rubbing your fingers together that you want the check. Likewise, I could look at you across the room, I could rub my fingers together, and if you understand that I'm asking about the money you owe me, the $50 I loaned you last Tuesday or whatever, you say, oh yeah, here's that $50, and you come over and hand me the thanks a lot, I really appreciate it. Or, alternatively, you could look at me and say, what are you talking about? At which point, I have to amp up my notice. I've got to give you a better notice, and I've got to say, the money. At which point, you could say, oh, I get it, yeah. Yeah, the $50, yeah, sure. Here's the $50, thanks for that. Or, you could once again come back to me with a question and say, what money? At which point, I've got to go back and give you a third notice. I've got to give you a third and improved notice, and I've got to say, the $50 I loaned you last Monday, on last Monday's meeting, that was witnessed by Bob and John. Now, in theory, you should have sufficient notice where you say, oh, yeah, here's the $50. Now, you might still try to say, hey, I don't know what you're talking about. The point I'm trying to illustrate, and the point that crossed my mind in July, is that sufficient notice has to be a reflection of the recipient. Right? I control whether I have sufficient notice or not. Just as you control, I can just give you a gesture. Rub my fingers together. It might be sufficient notice, or it might not. The notice isn't sufficient until the recipient says so. And that's what got me on this track. It has to be that way. It just seemed like an act of logic to me. And I started exploring that idea. And if it's true, it means that you don't have adequate notice until you say you have adequate notice.
Well, let's look into.
If you've got to have notice before you can get to hearing, then if you control the notice, you can stop the hearing. Go ahead.
Let's look into the idea just generally or briefly, and give a few examples of notice. Some of the people in the audience may have never received notice; they may not be anywhere aware of it. What would be some of the outward signs of having received notice from either government or some other entity, a corporation or a business?
It would be almost astonishing if there was anyone listening to this program that hadn't received notices on a regular basis throughout their life. For example, a classic example, you're going to get a notice from the IRS. You owe us $20,000. It starts with a notice. You get a notice from the Department of Transportation that you owe X number of dollars because you've been driving through their toll booths without paying your toll. They've got you on the camera. They send you notices all the time. I suspect, I'm not sure this is true, but I suspect that what we receive from the utility company at the end of the month when they say, hey, you owe us for electrical power, I think it's a notice. I think most.
The same might be also true, Alfred, with the your credit card statement or any other bill, maybe a department store bill. This is your notice.
When you say a statement, William, I mean, how much different is the word statement from the word notice?
100 miles, really.
No, I don't think it is.
Well,
I think a statement and a notice may be, I think the two might be synonymous, and they might be both significantly different from an invoice, for example.
All right.
An invoice might be different from a notice. Right? Now, that may be getting a little bit too peculiar right now, or I'm not sure about that, but I suspect it might be true. But the point I'm trying to make is people get notices all the time. In fact, that's how most of business is conducted in this country. And a notice Another interesting thing about notice is that when you begin to study the concept a little bit, you'll discover that notice is not necessarily written. Just as I tried to illustrate, you know, in the beginning where I was explaining how I might look across the room and see you over there and just rub my fingers together, that gesture can constitute sufficient notice.
So you see somebody down the street near a construction site and he's standing there waving his arms, that might indicate some kind of notice to you. You would have to make a decision as to what you're going to do about that. Do you mean, does he mean for me to run away or does he mean to come over here?
Exactly. The same thing could be true if you walked into a courtroom and you saw a gold-fringed flag. That gold-fringed flag could constitute a notice. And from what I've been able to read so far, I can at least suspect. I can't tell you it's true, but I can at least suspect. You see a man walk up in a uniform. He's got a badge and a gun and a club. That uniform constitutes a kind of notice. But the thing that's interesting is when I started to speculate that notice is not complete until the recipient says it's complete. Now, at first glance, that notion seems absurd because nobody ever asked you if you had sufficient notice.
Correct.
All right. But it is presumed that you have sufficient notice unless you do one thing, and so far as I can discover, one thing only. Ask questions. If I send you a notice that says, William, you owe me $100,000, and you don't respond to the notice, you just throw it in the trash. Technically, it can be construed that you have sufficient notice. You did not respond. On the other hand, if you take that notice and you call me on the phone and say, Al, you SOB, I don't owe you $100,000, I don't owe you $1,000. It's all a damn lie. None of it's true. Again, it's evidence that you have sufficient notice. You have responded to the notice. That's evidence you got sufficient notice. If you didn't respond to the notice by saying anything, your silence can be construed as sufficient as evidence you have sufficient notice.
So what we're saying,
the only alternative you have is to ask questions.
What we're really getting at here, folks, is that this isn't going to be something necessarily that will come in your mail in certified form, and at the very top of it, it's going to say notice. There's many different kinds, and anything that you can observe, apparently, anything that can take the form of information or attempt at any level of communication in the due process of law could constitute notice, and there's a variety of different kinds of notices, which maybe we'll get to some of them today or not. But so this is not something that's going to come like a stop sign into your life. We need to be wise as serpents, harmless as doves, be able to understand it. And then the interesting part of all of this is that we can then enter into a dialogue, either written or otherwise, to communicate questions back to whoever the sender was, that could perhaps really save the day and provide that solution. So continue, Alfred. I think I'm starting to get the idea.
Well, I'm starting to get the idea. I'm not telling anyone this is God's truth, but I'm telling you, when you stop to think about it, if you've been in the legal reform or sovereignty movement for any length of time and you've been studying the law, and you stop to think that notice is the first step in procedural due process, it's the bare minimum that has to be present in every instance where at least you're confronting government. They've got to give you notice, number one. I don't remember in 25 years anyone trying to describe and define what constitutes notice. And that void, notice is the essential principle, the particle, the one fundamental particle of the nuclear physics of law. I mean, this is where it all starts, with notice. And yet nobody up until now, to my knowledge, has bothered to consider whether we have sufficient notice or not. And so I simply started to continue. And I wrote an article that back in July on notice was speculated along the lines that I've mentioned so far on the program.
I'll have to stop you right there. We're coming into a break. And folks, stay with us. We'll be back in three.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Back here on Become Vocal Local. Now, as we were going into the break, we were getting into some more of the details of notice, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, I've looked and looked through my books, Alfred, and I can't find really any comprehensive definition of what constitutes notice. I do have a lot of material to look at, and yet there's no point by point by point, do this, do this, do this, supply that, that, and that. So maybe we can go into that a little bit further. I think you're on the right track.
No, I think, in fact, I've had feedback since I first advanced this idea, and I've talked about it on my own radio program four or five times now, and everyone who's responded is agreeing. They say, I think you're on the right track here. I think we've stumbled into something powerful, and the reason it's powerful is this. Once, if you agree, and if we are correct, again, this is a hypothesis, we don't know that this is God's truth, but it does appear that the recipient controls whether or not he has adequate notice. Again, we use the description up front, where I rub my fingers together, you don't get it. I then say the money, you don't get it. I then say a third notice, the money I loaned you last Monday in front of Bob and John as witnesses, at which point, in theory, you get it. All right? It's up to you as recipient to control whether or not you've got the notice. And the way you control is by means of asking questions. For example, where I got into this, I happened to pick up a copy of Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition. This is from 1979. Now, this is not the most recent edition. These concepts are a constant state of evolution and sometimes in a constant state of concealment. But I happened to pick up the 5th, and there is about a one-page definition of notice in there. And when you start reading through it, it makes a number of points where I say, basically, I was right on target. For example, down here, our actual notice, it talks about, he is presumed to have received personally because the evidence within his knowledge was sufficient to put him on inquiry. And they reference that a couple of times on this one page where they talk about notice. And this is exactly what I was suspecting in the first article I wrote when I was just guessing about this, theorizing about it. It has to be up to you to ask questions. And they're saying it puts you on inquiry. In other words, what they're suggesting is they can send you, and there's more within this definition that makes this point more clearly. I can't read the whole thing and try to explain it and never get through it all. But the analysis of this definition is, again, on my blog, and we'll give you that again before the program ends. You can download the whole article, and it'll show you how I've kind of gone through this and tried to reason my way through it. Point I'm trying to get to, they are saying that once you receive the first notice, it should be enough to put you on inquiry. Now, why are you on inquiry? Because the first notice does not have to be complete. That's where the notice becomes powerful and dangerous.
So part of this, Alfred, is the idea of subjective as opposed to objective, and on the other side, it implies reasonableness. In other words, the person that's receiving this, any reasonable man would be curious. Any reasonable person would seek more information, and they put the burden of seeking that information and responding up to the recipient.
That's exactly right. And if you don't ask any questions, it is presumed that you have not merely sufficient notice, it's presumed that you have knowledge of all the relevant facts. The definition in here illustrates that it is possible. I can send you notice of, again, I claim you owe me $50. There might be 10 facts, material facts, in the background for making that claim. I need only send you notice of one or two of those facts. And now the burden is on you to inquire to discover the other 8 or 10 or however many other facts are laying in the background. It is presumed by the law that once you get the first notice of one or two facts, that you are presumed to have notice of all of the background facts. This is dangerous because if you go into court, you go to the hearing, and let's suppose you've received a standard notice from the government. They say, you owe us $5,000 for one thing or another. Well, if that notice only gave you notice of how much they claim and a couple other odds and ends, but neglects to provide another 15 or 20 facts that are material to their claim, suppose you go to court and you deny, say, I don't owe the $5,000 and I deny this other point that's in the notice. Okay, you've denied two of the material facts. But there are perhaps another dozen material facts that are in the background. Under the law of notice, you are presumed to have known, you know those other dozen facts. Why? Because you saw about the first two. You got to notice the first two. It's presumed that you should have gone and looked to see what the other facts are. And it's presumed, because of that, they presume you have notice of the other dozen. Now, the point I'm trying to get to is the judge sits here and he weighs it and says, well, Mr. Adusk has denied two of the facts, the material facts, but he has not denied the other dozen material facts.
And this would even get worse, Alfred, when we talk about something as vast as the Internal Revenue Service Code. Now, people, when we get back, we're going to continue on this line and get into it even deeper. Just stay with us right here on Become Vocal Local.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on Cartavite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on Cartavite and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them, and what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast killing effect, that yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect, and most of the other herbs in there I find that strengthen the arteries, they help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy is as close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut, it's working on the liver, it's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
For more information or to order your Cartavite, call 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or tincture. Our website is heartdrop.com.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, fen, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
Now, you know, one of the things, Alfred, that I'm sure most of the listeners have experienced in their life, there are several different ways that we can move when there's a decision to make. One, we can go forward. One, we could go backwards or left or right. And sometimes a viable option is to just stand still and do nothing. But on this particular case, it sounds to me like exercising the do nothing option is going to be one of the most dangerous things that we could approach. Would that be a fair assumption?
I'd say that's exactly everything I'm reading and makes that clear. You've got one option. You can't sit still, nor can you go forward. You have to ask questions. If you make statements, you will have traversed. If you make any statements, I'm not saying this is absolutely true, but suppose you get a notice and you respond with an affidavit. What I've been able to read so far indicates that if you make a positive statement, it indicates that you've received sufficient notice. Once you got notice, we're going to the hearing. And the hearing is the place where the judge is going to slap you around.
Okay, now I'm starting to really get it. So for the listeners then, if you have received something and you're not clear on it, the thing to do then is to respond with questions. Now, before we go into the details of how that response may be made, one of the things that I learned in the real estate training schools was a technique was called bubbling, basically. But basically, when someone else makes a statement to you, or if you have a question, you turn it around, take that statement and you turn it around into a question. So you receive something and it said, Alfred, you owe me $100,000. You take that $100,000 statement and you turn that around into a question and you would send that back. Is that the right idea?
That is the right idea. All right?
Okay.
Now, the actual details remain to be worked out. How we're going to handle these questions is not absolutely clear to me just yet. For example, we could phrase everyone. We can take almost any statement you want to make. You're inclined to say, I have a right under the Constitution. Okay, instead of saying, I have a right under the First Amendment, for example, the Constitution, you might just take that statement and preface it with, isn't it true that I have a right under the Constitution? You know, insofar as it's relevant to the particular case at hand. But I'm just losing track of the question here, but the point is, questions. Now, the reason this makes me laugh, I mean, I get into this and I'm starting to grin, I'm starting to just practically giggle. It is so easy, once you get the hang of this, you just have to ask these people intelligent questions. And in fact, they have to answer them. That's part of the deal. You have not only a right, but in places they talk about a duty of inquiry when you receive your first notice.
And when they shut up and don't respond, does the shoe go on the other foot at that point? In other words, they sent you a notice. You respond with questions. They respond again with statements. You respond with questions, and then you don't hear from them. Is it then done?
I'd say what I think is this. At the point in time when they stop supplying answers to your reasonable questions, you can't just sit there and say, why, Daddy, why, Daddy, why, Daddy? You have to have reasonable and intelligent questions. But at the point in time when they stop responding to your questions, you have now denied notice, and that is the first element of procedural due process. And that is a basis for saying, wait a second, this thing can't go any further. You guys are denying me notice. You are not giving me full disclosure to which I am entitled if I inquire. Now, if you don't inquire, it's presumed you got notice. And nobody, virtually no one does inquire, so they operate on that presumption. And you get railroaded.
I think we're understanding now.
This to me is becoming, and I'm not the only one. I know there's a couple other people I know that I regard highly, and they're starting to just laugh about this. Once you see this, this is almost hilarious. For example, I subscribe to the notion that what passes for state government and virtually all of what passes for states is not the de jure state government. And the reason for that is Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Federal Constitution says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. The gold and silver coin are no longer in circulation. How is it that the states of the Union can continue to function? They are either acting unconstitutionally if they are conducting their affairs in some form of currency other than gold and silver coin, or at least a currency that's not backed by gold and silver coin, or they are not the states of the Union. I subscribe to the last theory. I believe that the entity called TX or NY or CA or FL and so on, I believe that these are territorial and or fictional states. They are a place where you can transact business and legal tender, but not gold and silver. Now, the point I'm getting to, if I'm correct, then if I receive a notice from State of Texas in all uppercase letters, which I read to signify this is the alternative, the territorial and or fictional state, I get the notice from these people. I'm entitled to respond back and ask them, what exactly does State of Texas in all uppercase letters identify? Are you guys the State of the Union, a member state of the perpetual union styled, quote, the United States of America, unquote, as found in the Articles of Confederation in the year of our Lord, 1781? Is that what you are? Or are you some other kind of state? These guys got an answer. And I don't care which way they answer this thing. If they say we are the state, then they have authority over me. But now I want to know why you're not doing business in gold and silver, because I've got a constitution that says you can only charge me a fine. You can only penalize me in gold and silver coin. And that's not happening.
And
now
so
you guys are either acting unconstitutionally or you're not the state. If you're not the state, you don't have authority over me. If you are the state, you're acting unconstitutionally, and again, go away.
And this alone might just be the question, folks, that will get them off your back. Because if they respond in the way that I think that that Alfred is leading here, if they respond, they would have to divulge far more than they would want to. And if you are dealing with a local government entity, they may not want to deal with you because there's easier fish to fry, and just drop the matter and get off your back. Would that be possible?
Oh, I think that's the reality of the situation. There are, you can try some of this, and it's not, you could in theory try the strategy. Again, you don't want to do it just because you hear it from me or William on the radio program. You want to think about this. But if you want it, where's the harm? Ask him questions. Where's the harm?
Exactly.
And it is, once you get into this and you start to understand, it's not necessary to fight with these people. It's not necessary to pick up a gun. It's not necessary to throw a bomb. All you have to do is master the art of reading. Number one, they send you a notice. You got to read it. You got to take it apart line by line and fact by fact. And then you inquire. It is your right and even your duty to make inquiry after you have received notice. And you ask reasonable and intelligent questions. What does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? I do not understand. Please explain.
Now, this would be an important time, I think, to interject before we do run out of time in this long section. But interject, what would be the best method of response? Certainly, you don't want to pick the telephone up and just call them. That would tip your hand, and there would be no record. So how would one go about responding to what you could comprehend as a notice if you received one in the mail or in any other format?
Well, my first, I can't tell you can't take God's truth. I'm just telling you what I think at the moment. My response would be by registered mail. I would do it always in writing. I want that paper trail. All right. And I want registered mail where I can say, look, I'm sending these people. I sent my 1, 2, 5, 20 questions. I sent them questions. There's my, and I would probably want to go back and look at Black's Fifth and pull up references to court cases that establish where I have a right to make this inquiry. And I would include that, and I'd say, well, here, I've got right to ask questions. Isn't that true? And let's see. Let's see where we go with this. But I'm gonna create a paper trail that's admissible in court and put them in a position where they have to respond or not.
And so would it be necessary or desirable at that point to stop by the bank or someone and have a notary notarize your document?
Well, here's the thing about a notarization. Maybe. But the one thing about a notary is they're there to verify your statements are made under penalties, pains, and penalties of perjury. Now, my reading is, for the moment, I don't think I want to make any statements. I only want to ask questions, and I'm not sure that you notarize questions.
Precisely. That's
okay. I might go at this. I'm not sure how I might bring a notary in, but he would say that he's only verifying that these questions were put in the mail on a particular date, or he watched Mr. Addis write these particular questions and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it might be that I could, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I don't want to make statements. I only want to ask questions.
How about recording the questions before you send it in?
That's not a bad idea.
Take your letter into the county clerk's office and say, I'd like to record this document, and then give me back an official copy of it.
One way or another, you can use the county clerk to do this. There's probably an intelligent way of doing this with a notary. You want to establish, and certainly with your certified mail and so on, certified and or registered, you want to get these questions back to these people and compel them. You want evidence? I ask questions. And if you are astute, you can ask questions that I guarantee they can't answer. And if they can't answer the questions, again, we got a problem. They can't proceed to the hearing until you have notice, and everything I've been able to see or deduce up until now indicates that you control when you have sufficient notice. You don't have sufficient notice until you run out of questions.
Now, I'm gonna take a slight tack and bring in the International Property Maintenance Code, but there are also building codes, municipal codes all through the land now, where a code enforcement officer might drive by your place or walk by your place, and maybe you've got a pane of glass that's cracked, or a shingle off on your roof, or leaves in the gutter or something like that, and the code enforcement officer has been empowered to write citations for those kind of code violations, and those code violations carry penalties on a daily basis, sometimes as much as $200 or more per day, because every day is considered an individual violation. Now, you'd want to be Johnny on the spot in this regard, because if you want to run into trouble here, you're going to rack up a substantial or a whopping bill that you'll have to be, that you'll have to take care of, if you decide not to make the repair necessary or whatever. So being quick about it and responding rapidly, I think in your blog you talk about not 72 hours, not 72 days, but maybe right away, being ready and prepared to do something quickly might avert this, but it would also, you would be, your clock would be ticking, and you would be accruing those expenses, those charges, alleged or otherwise, on a daily basis until this was resolved. Any insight in that direction at all?
Well, it's something that I'm curious about. I'm wondering how quickly you have to respond to a notice, and I don't have an answer on that just yet. I would say, if you let this thing drag on for any period of time, it's going to be presumed you have sufficient notice. And once that presumption kicks in, you're in a lot of trouble because you're going to court and the judge is going to probably slap you around. But do you need to respond within the first 60 seconds? Do you need to respond in the first 60 minutes, 60 hours? How fast do you have to get the notice in? The issue appears to be one of reasonableness. All right? Everything I've read in the definition of Black's, again, in the of notice in Black's Fifth, it refers back, doesn't give us real definitions of what constitutes notice. Notice is simply whatever is reasonable under the circumstances. When we notice can be virtually anything. I mean, all you got to do, again, all I've got to do is rub my fingers together. And exactly. Under certain circumstances, that is sufficient notice. You can see how dangerous this notice process can be, but at the same time, all you have to do is respond with questions, which is what I tried to do in that first example. Again, I rub my fingers together and you say, what are you talking about? You pose a question. You don't come back and flip me the bird or tell me to go away or just ignore me. You say, what are you talking about? Now I have to go to my second notice. I'm more expensive. I say, where's the money? Again, you say, what are you talking about? You respond with questions. At the point in time when you start making statements, or you flat out ignore me, now I realize we've got to either go to court or I've got to go slash your tires or something like that in order to get some satisfaction out of this situation. But this isn't, the example I'm using here is not simply some legal hypothesis. This is in fact part of our culture.
Exactly.
Everybody in this audience has, at one point or another, somebody said, hey, where's that pen I loaned you? Or where's the $50 I loaned you? Or where's the car? You know, that you borrowed my car, where's the car? And we'll sit there and we'll joke with the other guy. We'll say, what car? What are you talking about? We just sit there and just with a semi-straight face, we just kind of say, what are you talking about? I don't remember loaning you any pen. I didn't loan you a tape recorder. What are you talking about? We just sit there and grin. We know it's part of the way our thinking works. When the guy gives you the notice and he says, you know, you owe me the $50, the car, whatever, and you say, what's $50? Ha, ha, ha. We laugh about it. We joke about it. It's part of the way we think, and this thinking, I believe, is incorporated in our law and in the presumptions that control notice.
And due process goes way back, folks. It goes back to the Magna Carta and comes forward through law. No matter how you study it, slice and dice jurisprudence, the history of law, you're going to find references to all of this. And so it comes a point where when communication finally breaks down, that we proceed from notice into the hearing. And we want to do, as in the Bible, you know, it teaches that you want to go to your neighbor and talk over the problem, talk over the issue. You want to go to, if that doesn't work, you come back with a couple of witnesses and continue like that and do everything you can, including negotiating all the way to the courtroom to avoid that hearing. We'll be back right after this short intermission. Stay with us.
Most of mankind's diseases have now been conquered. This medical breakthrough can save your life or the life of a loved one. Please listen. The answer to AIDS, hepatitis A, B, and C, malaria, herpes, TB, most cancers, and many more of mankind's worst diseases has been found. Details of this amazing secret has been freely disclosed in Jim Humble's book, The Miracle Mineral Supplement of the 21st Century, available at miraclemineral.org. Read how in five countries of Africa, over 75,000 cases of malaria and other diseases were successfully treated with this new mineral supplement. Learn more at miraclemineral.org. It also works with cold, flu, pneumonia, sore throats, warts, mouth sores, and even abscessed teeth. Download part one of this amazing book free at miraclemineral.org. Then, if you're satisfied, purchase part two for only $9.95 or the hard copy for only $19.95. Please enter RBN when prompted on where you heard about miraclemineral.org.
There you go.
Here's a story. You wash your car, how long does it last? 3 days? A week? 2 weeks? Life Change Tea eliminates chemicals, toxins, and parasites, and much more. The effect? You lose weight. That's right, you lose weight. So here's the story. You wash your car, it gets dirty again. You cleanse your body, chemicals and toxins come back. The fix? Stay on the tea! And here's how we will help. Ask for the Mid-State Fair Special when ordering. Here's how to order. Online, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Or call us, 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. Get the Tea, restoring America's health, one tea bag at a time.
I'm Ayala Jags. I'm in business just like you. I spend a lot of time on my cell phone, and I'm very concerned about the potential dangers of cell phone radiation, and you should be too. I found dozens of studies from around the world linking cell phone use to everything from skin conditions to brain tumors. It's shocking, it's scary. Numerous products claim to block cell phone radiation, but do they really? Then I found the Wave Shield. It's the only shielding device that has survived rigorous testing in FTC-listed lab and is proven to block up to 97% of cell phone radiation from entering your sensitive inner ear. The Wave Shield is easy to apply, it fits almost every phone, and it really, really works. Don't take chances. Protect yourself, protect your family. The Wave Shield is only $19.95. Take just a moment. Call and order your Wave Shield right now. The evidence is growing. Why take a chance? Protect everyone you love. Call now.
866-989-9147.
Now, before we run out of time, folks, I've given these out several times over the months that we've been on air, but there's this five inductive criteria of logic that I really like. I keep the card on my desk all the time because I look at this and compare things with it, but they're very simple. Number one is relevance. Is this material that we've presented today relevant in your life? I think it is. Two, is it testable? Certainly. Look in your mailbox. Look in your in-basket for your bills. Is it compatible with previously well-established hypotheses? I think so. does it have a predictive or explanatory power? When we look at all of the egregious tyranny that's coming down on us and at us through the legal system and through the captains of finance and industry and their bills and their billings, I think this has very predictive and explanatory power as to why so many people get arrived with the law when they could simply ask questions. And then is it simple? Absolutely. This is perfectly simple. Before we run out of time, Alfred, please let the people know how they can get to your blog and read the rest of this. And then, if there's some place, I know not everyone can afford, I've got the Black's Eighth, and I've got a couple of the other Blacks that I've gotten from used bookstores, but I paid a lot of money for this big, handsome, heavy Eighth Black's Law Dictionary, the Eighth Edition. Is there any places on the web that you could point people to do a little research on their own where they might not have to come out of the pocket with the big bucks to buy these dictionaries?
Right, yeah, I don't know. There's Find Law. There are a bunch of places you can go. You put things into Google, and who knows what you're going to find. I mean, there's research is endless on the web. You can, you know, it's not necessary to spend money, but it is necessary to spend time. It requires effort. Money is almost the least important criteria for doing this kind of research, but it does take time and it takes effort. Our blog is at http://, and then Adask, A-D-A-S-K dot WordPress, WORDPRESS dot com. Again, Adask dot WordPress dot com. And I have two articles up there right now that deal with this concept of notice, and if you'll take the time to read them, I think you'll be surprised. I think you'll start laughing and grinning the same way I am. I think we've got something powerful. I won't say it's a silver bullet, but it's pretty close.
On the last few minutes that we've got, just touch briefly again on substantive and procedural due process so that they can understand where this notice fits in once more.
Notice is the first of two elements that comprise procedural due process. Procedural due process is the minimum. There are different varieties of due process, but procedural due process is the bare-bones minimum they have to give you, and notice is the first step. If you can handle notice, they can't take you to a hearing. First notice, then opportunity to be heard. If you haven't had proper notice, they can't move you to the hearing. The hearing is where you run into trouble.
But it's up to us to determine whether we've had proper notice. As long as we can keep this dialogue open, as long as we can continue to ask questions, we're still in the process of determining whether notice has been given.
That is my theory. That's the way it appears to me. And it, I won't say that this will absolutely stop them, but it certainly, to my mind, gives you defense. So, look, I didn't receive procedural due process. They have not given me full disclosure on all the facts relevant to this notice. I got to have it. And if the trial court won't back you up, I'll bet that an appellate court will.
Well, I thank you so very much for coming on with us today, Alfred. I think you've opened up some interesting things. I'd love to have you come back again and join us. I do appreciate your blog, too. Folks, this has been Become Vocal Local. Take action right where you are. Don't stop. And until the next time, good afternoon,